from KUER News in Salt Lake City. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. One of the characters in the Musician Sting's Broadway musical talks about being in one of those nightmares where you're deep in the water and you think you're drowning. That's what it's like for the workers at the local shipyard. The shipyard has been the lifeblood of this town in northeast England, and at this point in the story, it's shut down. The play gets at what it means to lose your job when it was your work that gave you dignity. A man's work is a sacrament, says the local priest, and he proposes a project. They'll build one last ship. The story is deeply personal for Sting, who conjured these characters from his own life, to talk about the importance of work and community. We're talking about the play today, which has just opened at the Pioneer Theatre Company, The Last Ship, after the news.
Take Radio West wherever you go with KUER's mobile app for Android and iPhone. Public radio is always a swipe away with KUER's mobile app, free and available for download right now in your mobile phone's app store.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The musician Sting had a story buried inside him for a long time, and pieces of it seemed to have come out in the songs he would write for his rock music, but mostly he kept it to himself. It was his story, of course, of growing up in the shadow of a shipyard in northern England and wanting out, wanting to escape what he's described as a surreal industrial landscape. And he did escape, as we all know, of course, but he couldn't get away from the story, and now he's told a version of it in a Broadway musical, a play called The Last Ship, which is receiving its regional premiere at the Pioneer Theatre Company. It opened last Friday. In a TED Talk a few years ago, Sting explained what brought the story out of him. It was a case of writer's block, terrible writer's block, which lasted for weeks and then months and then years.
So you start asking yourself questions. What have I done to offend the gods that they would abandon me so? Is the gift of songwriting taken away as easily as it seems to have been bestowed? Or perhaps there's a deeper psychological reason. It was always a Faustian pact anyway. You're rewarded for revealing your innermost thoughts, your private emotions on the page for the entertainment of others, for the analysis, the scrutiny of others. And perhaps you've given enough of your privacy away. And yet, if you look at your work, could it be argued that your best work wasn't about you at all? It was about somebody else. Did your best work occur when you sidestepped your own ego and you stopped telling your story but told someone else's story? Someone perhaps without a voice, where empathetically you stood in his shoes for a while or saw the world through his eyes. Well, they say write what you know. If you can't write about yourself anymore, then who do you write about? So it's ironic that the landscape I'd worked so hard to escape from and the community that I'd more or less abandoned and exiled myself from should be the very landscape, the very community I would have to return to find my missing muse. And as soon as I did that, as soon as I decided to honor the community I came from and tell their story, the songs started to come thick and fast. I've described it as a kind of projectile vomiting, a torrent of ideas, of characters, of voices, verses, couplets. Entire songs almost formed whole, materialized in front of me, as if they'd been bottled up inside me for many, many years.
And those characters and those songs form the framework of the play, The Last Ship. Today in the program, we're talking about the production. Karen Eisenberg is with us, artistic director of Pioneer Theatre Company, has a long career in musical theatre. She directs the production of The Last Ship, and she's here in the studio. Welcome. Thanks for being with us. Brian Martin is also with us. He plays the role of the prodigal son, Gideon Fletcher. This is his debut with the Pioneer Theatre Company. He's performed at other regional theaters, many around the country, including the Alabama Shakespeare Festival and the Pittsburgh Civic Light Opera. And Bryant Martin, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Ruthie Stevens is also with us. She plays Meg Dawson. It's also her first time at PTC. She's originally from England, now lives in Bushwick, yeah?
That's right.
Yeah. She's performed around the country, a published journalist as well, has a pretty cool fashion blog too. Ruthie Stevens, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Dan Sharkey is also with us. He plays Jackie White, the shipyard foreman that Sting played as part of the Broadway run. Sharkey's Broadway performances include The Bridges of Madison County and Amazing Grace. He's performed off-Broadway, around the country. Welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
I want to begin, Karen, with you. How is it the Pioneer Theatre Company came to this play?
I saw it in New York and thought, it would really touch people here in Utah. And when it closed, I reached out to the producer and I said, what's the plan here?
What are you going to do with this thing?
Yeah, what's going on? And they basically said that they did not have plans at the moment. They didn't have plans to license it, which is the sort of normal journey from a Broadway production. And I said, well, if you would entertain the notion of a reputable regional theater presenting it, I'd like to put my name at the top of the list. And he put me in touch with Kathy Shankar, who is Sting's manager, and she was one of the co-producers of the New York production. And through Kathy, I negotiated a deal for us to do it here in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, it's one of those plays that didn't have a long run on Broadway. So I wonder if you thought about it as a work in progress, not fully formed, not just a static piece of work, but something that you can work with a bit?
I think that that's the case. I mean, it's more so when you are able to reach out to the authors and ask questions.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You had a kind of an email exchange?
I have some lovely email exchanges with both Sting and John Logan, which is kind of neat. And exciting for us.
John Logan, who wrote the book.
Correct.
Co-wrote the book, yeah.
Yeah. I like to think that any project we do is a work in progress.
Sure.
So I approach it with, how are we going to tell this story? This was especially true in this case because I felt there were aspects of the story I wanted to focus on in a different way than the Broadway production did. And Sting really feels that everything is a work in progress. He says that his songs are never finished.
Yeah.
So that's kind of exciting and very generous to collaborators because, great, let's throw around how else we can come at this.
I want to play another moment from Sting. We're not going to spend too much with Sting, but I think it gives us a sense of sort of how he works into this story, which is important. And he has talked about how one of the first things he wrote was after he finally broke the writer's block, was one of the first things he did was write this list of names of people he had known there in the town where he had grown up. And they become characters, of course, in this play, in the drama, where they explain who they are and they explain their hopes for and fears for the future. And it's kind of perfect exposition for the play. And you, in fact, Karen, incorporate this. Let me play this moment. This is Sting introducing us to Dan Sharkey's character, actually. You'll hear him sort of sing this part, Jackie White, foreman of the shipyard.
One of the first things I wrote was just a list of names of people I'd known. And they become characters in a kind of three-dimensional drama where they explain who they are, what they do, their hopes and their fears for the future. This is Jackie White. He's the foreman of the shipyard. My name is Jackie White, and I'm foreman of the yard, and you don't mess with Jackie on this quayside. I'm as hard as iron plate. We'll be tied you if you're late when we have to push a boat out on the spring tide. Now, you could die and hope for heaven, but you need to work your shift. And I'd expect his owl to back us to the hilt. For if St. Peter at his gate were to ask you why you're late, why you tell him that you had to get a ship built. We built battleships and cruisers for Her Majesty the Queen, super tankers for Onassis and all the classes in between. We built the greatest ship in tonnage what the world has ever seen. And the only life worth known is in the shipyard. Steel in the stockyard, iron in the soul would conjure up a ship where there used to be a hole.
But we don't know what we'll do if this yard gets sold. For the only life we've known is in the shipyard.
And they don't know what they'll do if this yard gets sold.
That's right.
And that's the basis for the play. Talk about that part of it, because this idea, there's a love story in here too, which is really important, which we'll dig into. But the idea of work giving identity is really critical.
It's huge, and I think it's something that actually is more prevalent in the United States right now than we are acknowledging out front. But auto industry, coal industry, these areas of career that are disappearing, being diminished, and that they're in the family, fathers and sons and grandfathers and great-great-grandfathers who have stayed in the same industry and created an identity for people, for towns, for communities, is not just a shipbuilding issue. And interestingly enough, for theater people, it's completely our identity is what we do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It ties in even more within a rehearsal room than I think we all thought of when we walked into it. And somewhere in the middle, like a little light bulb went off. I was like, Oh, wait, this is us too. Yikes.
Dan, talk about Jackie, the way you developed that character and how crucial. Because he's lost his way in the play.
He has.
As it develops, because he's has no identity anymore. He's not the foreman anymore.
Right. Well, I think what he lost was his inspiration. He saw the writing on the wall where the other men refused to and wanted to fight this closing of the shipyard. But he saw the inevitability of it being closed. And I think that broke his soul.
Yeah.
And it took Father O'Brien and his wife, Peg, to convince him that he is the leader of these men and he has to stand up or the whole community will be broken. And I did some research on a shipyard foreman, and I found that it was more than understanding contracts, understanding negotiations, being the union representative. He also, it says right there in job description, you will take care of these men. You will watch out for them. You will help them. And that, I think, was the biggest thing for me. Because as everybody struggles in the show to be there to support them or say calm down or this really helped me find this character of a true leader in a time of desperation.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, this is, I hope this isn't a dopey question, but how did you get the accents? And Ruthie, you're from the Northeast part of England. Are you anywhere near Wells End?
No. I'm
okay.
From the West Midlands,
okay,
which is kind of the middle of England. But we do have our own accent and dialect there,
sure,
which is I won't do it. It's horrific.
Okay.
But the Northeast, I mean, that is a completely new accent for me also. I mean, I don't have the R sound of the Americans,
yeah,
but it still was a challenge for me to figure that out too.
Yeah. So I'm always interested in how accents sort of inform the way the characters work for Jackie. Like that's almost, speaking it in that way is almost a physical thing.
Absolutely. And in fact, we as Americans tend to not move our tongue a lot when we talk. It's kind of a bit of a lazy version. And you have to actually be animated to do this Geordie accent. You have to, it's sort of a forward thing, and your face actually has to like lift up to do it, and it gives you energy where you're like, oh wow, I didn't realize that I didn't have energy there before.
Yeah,
but it's great. Also, it's so much fun.
It sounds fun. Ruthie, is it as hard for the American? I wonder if it's easier for a British person to do this, or is it like starting again? Do you know what I mean? To find that accent? Because it's so different.
Well, it's easier for me because it's in my ears, I think.
Got it.
In England, you grow up with so many accents in such a small island.
Yeah.
And we love to mimic, you know, things we hear on TV. So it's a familiar accent to me. Not that I've done it that much. But I don't know if you guys were, how familiar you were with the Geordie accent. But to me, it's something I've heard all my life.
Yeah. Brian, let me hear from you on the accent part. Is that a struggle?
I don't really think it's a struggle. I I feel like I have a pretty decent ear for dialects, but we're really lucky because Sarah Shippenbotham, who was our dialect coach, is just fantastic. And
she really
harped on it, and she didn't let us get confined by it. You know, she didn't let us – you know, she didn't have us be so true to it that we kind of lost the integrity of the story, if that makes sense, and like get locked into it. So she made it very, very comfortable. And whenever she would talk to us in the dialect. So it was always in our ear and it was always there. And so I think because of that, it made it a lot easier to do.
Yeah. So Sting has sort of transformed the story a bit. So Sting goes off in his version, of course, and finds fortune as a rock musician. Gideon dreams of a different life, a life in the at sea, and it doesn't turn out the same way. Talk about that part of it. He leaves the place like Sting did, but he's returning kind of with his tail between his legs, or.
Well, he returns upon the death of his father. Yeah. So I think it's a little bit of a guilt trip home.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing about Gideon in that sense is he left when he was 16.
Yep.
And there is that growing up that happens at 16 to 21. If you make a very bold choice at 16, by 21, you maybe have grown up a little bit and have some other thoughts. But apologizing and just coming back for Gideon wasn't in the cards. And, you know, he dreamed of being a big ship's captain, and it didn't work out that way. Did it not work out that way because he wasn't good at it, or because that's not where his soul really lies? I think that's to be discovered in the show. But I also think, you know, we make choices when we're 16 that when we're 20 we really are very quick to go, oh wow, that maybe wasn't the smartest move.
I'm completely different now.
Yeah.
And that's a theme, which we'll come back to when we talk more about the love story. But so, Brian, tell us how you're thinking about Gideon as a character.
I think it's definitely interesting to play somebody like that. I mean, I had a great relationship with my parents, so I, as far as that goes. But I mean, I had friends who obviously didn't, so I was able to kind of draw from that a little bit. But I think
you mean you didn't have an abusive,
you know,
alcoholic shipbuilding.
You know,
father?
I just didn't. My dad really loved me, continues to do so right. This day. I'm not really sure why, but I think it's really neat because I mean, I definitely had a period, and I think everybody kind of does, where you definitely get away from your roots, and you definitely are like, you know, I'm going to go off. Because I grew up on a 400-acre farm, and so when Karen talks about this way of life dying, I mean, that hit really personal for me.
And,
I mean, I think it's less than 1% of people claim agriculture on their tax return. So, I mean, it's going. And so, you know, my dad, he actually did weld and knows how to weld. So when we went to the audition, I thought that was really interesting. But this whole way of life just kind of really hit home for me. So
I want to ask about place, because that's an important part, and because it's also important in terms of the way we see the set, the way which is remarkable, and maybe we can talk about the sort of puzzle piece of a set that it's really extraordinary. But let's talk about Wall's End as a place, because it comes up in the song, which I think a lot of people will know, All This Time, Sting's song. And it's there are a couple of songs that I think Sting fans will recognize, When We Dance and All This Time. But it doesn't – and this was something Charles Isherwood wrote about in his review. Like, they don't seem like pop songs shoehorned into another thing.
Right.
Like, they don't at all. And it made you – it made me anyway realize, when you think about All This Time, which is about that place, that he's been thinking about that place a long time. I mean, the album came out in the mid-90s.
There's a lot of things that I think have sort of reflectively come back to Sting about this piece that are like, oh, I've been thinking about this for much longer than it took to get to writing this. And I think it speaks to our roots do influence us in many, many ways in our work, in our art, in our career. And so I think, you know, they were the drops that were leading up to the flood of material that this piece ended up being. But Wall's End itself, I mean, is the photographs of the shipyard and that town are beyond striking.
Yeah.
There is several photographs of a ship just completed construction that literally looks like it's sitting in a street in the town. And if you can – I mean, we can't even conceive of what that's like, of literally looking to the right out of your front door and there is a giant ship.
Like, in the you're literally living in the shadow of it.
It's beyond literal, and it's so imposing and so daunting, and it's what they do. As Jackie White says, this is what we do. We build ships, and there they are. So I think that alone, I mean, he lived there. It could be an inspiration for us looking at the photographs of the shipyard and those ships was kind of inspiring.
This is Arthur. Do we need to describe who Arthur is to do this scene? I guess we do, because this is a really important. So Arthur and Jackie and then some other men are in this scene. And as Jackie talks about, what will we do if the shipyard gets sold? Well, it has. And this is the thing that they're dealing with now. Do you want to talk a little bit about this? Because this gets us to this idea of the only life we know is in the shipyard and the tension of do they go and work?
This is the setup of the entire show in the third scene of the play. And it's based on the real life events that happened in the shipbuilding industry in Northern England in the early 1990s when the shipbuilding industry shifted to being done in Korea and Japan and the Far East, and they couldn't afford to build those kinds of ships in Northern England anymore. And the shipyards got shut down, the workers got locked out, and then what happened in these towns?
Yeah.
This particular shipyard was bought by a salvage company, and the people of the town were being offered jobs as salvage workers.
Yeah.
Not appealing to fifth-generation shipbuilders.
Dan, how's Jackie reacting to the idea?
This, again, goes back to him sort of losing his soul and seeing that it's going to happen and not realizing that he's a great line. You know, Sting's words are so often poetry, and he has this great line that says, "We're back for a reason, for a bargain with death." And that bargain is, we'll go, but we're going to go on our terms, and we're going to go out as proud men.
Here's a scene from The Last Ship.
Listen to me! Listen! Mr. Newland is not here to entertain grievances. He's here to offer you work.
He's going to reopen the shipyard then, is he?
No, Davy, he's not. Nor is anyone else, no matter what you hear. What Mr. Newland is offering you is a chance to join us up front.
What's the offer? A lower wage, I'll bet. The wage will be competitive with the current market.
The current market is unemployed.
And we'll give you jobs.
My husband liked the job he had.
Jackie, come on. I know what the yard means to you. It means the same thing to me, but we can't live in the past. Don't you see that, lads?
But Newlands won't be making ships, will it?
Our primary business is reclaiming and repurposing industrial assets.
Joking, sandwich.
And we're expanding into the manufacturing.
But you won't be making ships.
No, Jackie. Newlands won't be making ships because the Koreans and the Japanese are making them at far less cost.
Listen, lads, it's the way of things. And you can keep your blinders on as the world leaves you behind, or you can face reality and apply for a new job with me.
A salvageman working in a scrapyard.
That's the job.
Not my job. For my name is Jackie White. I'm the foreman of the yard. And you don't mess with Jackie on this quayside. I'm as hard as iron plate. Won't be tied if you're late. When we have to push a boat out on the spring tide. Now you could die and hope for heaven, but you'd need to work your shift. And I'd expect yous all to back us to the hilt. And if St. Peter at his gate were to ask you why you're late, you'd tell him that you had to get a ship built. We build battleships and cruisers for Her Majesty the Queen, super tankers for Onassis and the classes in between. We built the greatest shipping tonnage that the world has ever seen.
and the only life we've known is in the shipyard.
Steel in the stockyard, iron in the store, we'll conjure up a ship where there used to be a hole.
And we don't know what we'll do if the yard gets sold.
For the only life we've known is in the shipyard.
Young Tom, and boy!
With you, Mr. White.
From The Last Ship, which runs through October 1st, shows are at 7 o'clock on Mondays through Thursdays, 7:30 on Fridays and Saturdays. There's also a Saturday matinee. For tickets and more information, visit our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the Pioneer Theatre Company's latest production, the regional premiere of musician Sting's very personal play called The Last Ship. We've been talking about how Sting had this chronic case of writer's block for years, really, and it was only broken when he started thinking about the community he had left in Wallsend, a shipbuilding town in northern England where he was born and raised. As soon as he began thinking about those people in that place, the floodgates opened, the songs returned. They're the basis for the play. It's a musical about work and home. It's called The Last Ship. Karen Eisenberg directed the show. She's with us here in the studio. Bryant Martin plays Gideon Fletcher. Ruthie Stevens is Meg Dawson. And Dan Sharkey plays the shipyard foreman, Jackie White. The show runs through October 1st. We'll have more details about that a little bit later on the program. So, Ruthie Stevens, explain Meg's choice. She's got a choice she's having to make. You don't have to tell us what the choice is, but tell us what she's dealing with, the choice she has to make in the
play.
Well,
Meg had a relationship with Gideon when she was a teenager, and he left to become a great man of the world, as he says. And she was pregnant at 15. So she was left alone with a child to raise in the northeast of England, where one does not dwell. One just gets on with life.
Carries on, right?
Yes. You'll never see anyone from Newcastle crying. Let's put it that way.
Is that right?
Yes. Especially the men. You know, it's great in the funeral scene that we have in the show, actually, that no one gets overly emotional, because that is very true to that part of England. Yeah. I mean, you've heard of stiff upper lip. Well, that's real.
Yeah.
So she has a child, and she finds a relationship with a loving man who takes on the child as her own. So her life is shaping up pretty well until 15 years later, Gideon returns. And, you know, obviously he is the biological father of her child. So she has to consider that and what that's going to mean for her son.
So the choice is, I don't want to oversimplify it. Arthur, mm-hmm, is kind of is the safe choice. He's been reliable. He gets along with your son.
Right.
Gideon is,
I think she loves Arthur. I don't think it's
a
Absolutely. Safe choice. I think it's a real relationship.
Yeah.
But I think Gideon returning, it's a little bit of her teenage self coming back.
Yeah.
And those feelings. And also the father of her child. I mean, that's a bond that they share that she won't share with anyone else, unless, you know, she has other children. But so I think there's a little bit of a pull, but I'm not sure it's a huge choice that she has to make.
Yeah. How do you see it, Karen?
I definitely.
We were talking off air about whether or not you should reveal all of this, and I'll just leave it up to you.
I don't have a problem, because I think people will take away what they want to take away. But yeah. I definitely have a very strong opinion about it, and maybe it's ageist. I think your first love at 15 and 16 is spectacular, but you are 15 and 16.
Yeah.
And even had Gideon stayed, there's not saying that that is a relationship that would have lived on. So we have actual 16-year-olds playing young Meg and young Gideon for that reason. I think it's important that we recognize the beauty of young love, but not necessarily its longevity. And so I feel that we need to recognize Meg's dilemma of wanting her son to have a relationship with his biological father, but also recognize that Arthur is the man that raised him and cared for him and who adores Meg, and she loves him back. There's just that little unresolved piece that Gideon comes home hopefully to resolve. And how they do that is that part I won't reveal.
Good. Okay, good. Yeah, good. I was hoping you wouldn't reveal that part. let's play it. Here's a scene, actually, that I think reveals a lot of that. It's Meg Dawson, played by Ruthie Stevens, and Gideon Fletcher, played by Bryant Martin.
Hello, Meg.
Oh, I didn't expect you'd be here.
You didn't expect I'd be in the pub on a Saturday night?
At the meeting.
What meeting?
They've padlocked the yard. The men are locked out.
Oh, well.
You don't seem terribly troubled by that.
And why should I be?
Because Father Jim took such a risk to get that boat started. Because the men have something they believe in. Because they're your people.
They're not my people.
Your father's.
Oh, for God's sake, Meg. It's your Arthur Milburn what's doing it, Al.
This isn't about Arthur.
No, it's about you and me.
There is no you and me. That ended when you sealed off, didn't it?
But now I'm back.
Oh, and of all unlikely things, life has moved on without you.
So what do you want me to say? Yes, I left. What was that to do with me father? Beating me, seemed like every other night. Was I supposed to stay and take it? Turn out like him? One more man made brutal by this town. Would you have loved that man?
I loved the boy that went away. I loved the boy that promised he'd be back. What happened to him?
You want to know what happened to him? I'll tell you. He went away with dreams of becoming a great man of the world and coming back to take you away. That didn't happen. I was a third-class merchant sailor. And that's all I was ever going to be. All those years, Meg. All those oceans. The only time I was ever happy was here. With you.
When we were children, Gideon. A whole life has happened. And I'm happy with Arthur.
You love him.
I do. Very much.
But then why haven't you married him already?
Honestly, what do you expect of me?
Well, just give me a chance is all I ask. I'm back to you, Meg. No great man of the world, but just as I am. If he loved you like I love you, I would walk away in shame. I'd move town, I'd change my name. When he watches you, when he comes to buy your soul.
So there's that song, When We Dance, and gives it a new context, right? Isn't that weird? Like hearing a Sting song now, I will never hear those songs any...
The same way. Yeah.
Bryant, is it intimidating singing an iconic Sting song?
I knew I was going to get asked that
question. You know, it's such an obvious question, but it's a good one.
You know, I really didn't think about it until people started asking me about it. Just because I feel like, you know, Sting obviously sang them in his context and for the album. And this, I feel like it's almost a different song because we're doing it in a totally different context and in a totally different way. And I purposefully did not listen to any of Sting's music before we came because his performance is his own and my performance is my own. And I want to make sure that it's not – that we're not trying to copy something that's already been done. And, you know, and of course Michael Esper, who played him on Broadway, had his take on it as well. But is it daunting? I don't think it is. Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful music, and it's amazing to sing. And I love the fact that Kieran wasn't locked into doing it a certain way. It was all about finding the truth of what this moment was and then how those lyrics informed what Ruthie and I were bringing to the table from a character standpoint. So,
I think one of the things, Kieran, you've talked about is working with the actors you have, making that part of the context as opposed to – would you say something about that? Because I think that's interesting. This is who we've got. We've got to make this work. Because that's the context.
The you know, the magic of a Broadway show is the original cast.
Yeah.
And those are the people that were in the room creating a show. I am completely convinced that were different people in the room, the show would be different. And I don't think any director at any level would dispute that. So I try to bring with me into the rehearsal room on every project that idea. Yes, I have very, very specific thoughts, and I'm not shy about sharing them, as they will tell you. But Bryant will not play that role the same way as five other people, and nor should he, yeah, because it won't feel organic. It won't feel like that's a real person up there. And that's the most important thing to me, because the audience is going to – they're very smart. And if you're fake, they will know. And then they don't connect to the show, and they don't get involved in the show, and they don't give themselves over to the story you're telling.
Karen Eisenberg, director of Pioneer Theater Company's production of The Last Ship. Bryant Martin with us, plays Gideon Fletcher. Ruthie Stevens is Meg Dawson in the play, and Dan Sharkey is with us. He plays Jackie White. The show runs through October 1st. You can get details about all of the particulars on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the latest production, the Pioneer Theater Company. It's Sting's Broadway musical, The Last Ship, opened on Friday, last Friday, runs through October 1st. We'll give you details about where to get tickets a little bit later on the program. Karen Eisenberg directs the show. She's with us here in the studio. Bryant Martin plays Gideon Fletcher. Ruthie Stevens is Meg Dawson, and Dan Sharkey is Jackie White. All right, tell me about the look of the production. It's gritty, like it seems a little grimy, a little dirty, and that's part of the cacophony, really, of like chains and creaking timbers and stuff like that's part of the idea. Yeah,
I wanted it to reflect what the real materials were, yeah. And while I didn't fool myself into thinking that we were going to bring welding tanks onto the stage and actually weld something, I thought the raw materials of what would be in this shipyard needed to be around. And our set designer, who is genius, Jim Noon, wanted to evoke this world without being literal. And he always says, if I give you enough pieces and parts, you will be able to put it together. And he certainly did in this one. But we use an actual photograph of the town of Wall's End as one of our backdrops.
Right. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
What's it like to work in that space as actors? I mean, you know, you've got – obviously, you're probably, at least in the early days of rehearsal, you're bumping into a lot of stuff. But then once you figure it out, there's a kind of choreography involved, right?
Absolutely. It is one of the funnest sets I have ever worked on. And as Karen just said, not only is it beautiful, it's functional, and it's so smart theatrically. It's brilliant. But to climb these 14-foot ladders
and then
get pushed all around
and
the
stage
and sing and stomp your feet and then get back down and up another flight of stairs in, you know, 8 measures, it's really fun. It's a beautiful set.
I used to climb 100-foot silos growing up, so I mean it was just like – and just hands dirty. And I was jokingly said to Greg, who's the costume designer, I told him – I was like, well, you should have just called me. I said, I've got beat-up Dickies and Carhartts back home and, you know, mangled boots. I should have just brought it with me. So – and I feel like just because of that and because of who these people are, I mean this is just my opinion, but I don't think you don't see that on a Broadway stage or generally. I mean, these guys that are just really, you know, very just rugged and blue collar, and I don't know, Davey and I talk about it all. Well, Jordan, I should say, I call him by his character name, but you just don't see that, and it's really exciting to get around and kind of get some dirt under your fingernails.
It's a wonderfully gung-ho group who is unafraid of anything. And, of course, I said to Ruthie one day, oh, well, to get to this platform, you've got to actually climb a straight ladder. And she's like, I'm an aerialist. It's not really a big deal.
I can do that.
I can do that. But, you know, young Tom scales a ship and everybody's on the ladders and climbing and jumping and throwing chains. It's, but no, I never got a moment of, oh, I don't know if I can do that. Everybody was so committed that they wanted to be the one climbing the ladder and getting to the top level. So,
yeah, Ruthie Stevens, is that you've done trapeze.
I have.
So this is not exactly.
This is
probably no big deal, right?
This is boring.
Well, mainly, my character doesn't really get involved in the shipyard. I just stand in awe watching my castmates.
You do go up and down stairs, so maybe that's not. But that's not the same thing.
That's not totally challenging.
No.
but everyone else is doing a fine job of scaling things and bits of set and whatnot.
I wonder. So what was the relationship like? You mentioned you had some lovely email exchanges with Sting. And you don't have to tell me what sort of changes you may have recommended. That's okay. But what was that like? Can we try this or should we move this around? I mean, what was that like? Like, how much ownership does he feel for this and how willing is he to work with you on that?
Well, I think the telltale moment for me was when I knew he was giving me a lot of leeway. The what ifs that I sent him were embraced. But then I really felt, since he wasn't here, you know, I need to outline everything we're going to change, including changes in underscoring or change of key, or well, I want to shorten that intro, and or we need 5 more bars of transition music. So we started a list, and I sent him an email, and I said, you know, I have a list. How much do you want to know? And that elicited the, my songs are never done, and so do what needs to be done, which, I mean, I have writers who are in the room who don't give you that much freedom. So I think it has to do with he feels so connected to the work. He knows the soul is there, and I appreciate the trust he had in us to keep that part of it and then just make the technical adjustments that facilitated this production.
Did I get this right? Was he involved in some way in the auditions? Or was that for the Broadway production?
That was for the Broadway. For the Broadway.
That would have been intimidating, but he is coming. And I guess we can say he's going to be at the show tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me how you're thinking about that. Bryant, you start.
I always get these ones first. I think it's really neat that number one, that he's coming, and two, it must be such a surreal thing to like see something so personal, and then like these songs that he's made so famous to like sing them to him,
right.
Like
right.
Oh, you know, the songs that you know you've made millions of dollars off of, I'm gonna give you my twist. So I do have a part in the show where I come out and give a eulogy, and so I'm definitely gonna look for him when I
great.
When I come out.
Thanks.
Just so I'm gonna play everything out in that general direction.
Terrific.
Ruthie, how are you thinking about that?
Well, I'm very excited, obviously, but I think my mum and dad are kind of going through the roof right now. I told my dad that Sting was coming, and last night he texted me and said, oh, by the way, I probably should mention, I was there when the last ship sailed in Newcastle.
What?
Yes, that was my reaction. What? My dad is epically casual about things. So, yeah, apparently he was there, and he told me, Karen and I were just discussing, that the last ship was actually launched sideways because the river was not wide enough to accommodate it, apparently. So that's pretty wild.
That's great.
Yes.
So you'll just think about that to distract you from the fact that Sting is in the audience?
That's
oh,
right.
God. Yeah, absolutely.
Dan, you want to?
Well, as Karen said, I have worked with Sting before, so he's heard me sing, so I'm not as nervous. I think what I'm more nervous about is I'm actually playing the part that he played.
Yep.
So he knows it pretty well. So I think that's a little intimidating, but just knowing him and knowing that he loves this piece so much and he has put his heart and soul into it, and he knows that things grow and change, and I think that's what makes him a great artist, is that it's not concrete. Life is always changing. His work is always changing. And I know that he's not here to judge, but to learn and to watch and see what we bring to it, as opposed to saying, oh, look what they've brought to it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's really exciting. And I think he's probably as excited as we are to see this piece.
I bet he is.
Yeah.
There's this thing that Sting has talked about in that TED Talk I mentioned earlier about the importance of community. How he says there's this link between storytelling and community, and there's this link between community and art. And he talks about how abstract economic theory that denies the needs of a community is short-sighted and cruel. Just as a theme, as an idea, would you talk a little bit about that? Because this idea of community absolutely comes through in this piece.
It's one of the beautiful storylines, because I think it is an entire storyline in the piece. And I think the idea of a community coming together to support itself in time of trouble is really wonderful. And I think we see that happen, and I think it's a theme that Utahns will recognize. I think we'd love it to be completely universal.
Mm-hmm. Because we should say they're working on this crazy project conceived of by a terrific character in the play, Father O'Brien. And he talks about how you cannot give up your identity, you can't give up your pride and your history. Work is a sacrament, he says. And so he wants to build a ship, even though the shipyard is closed down. That's the project that they're working on. Would you say something about that? Because it just seems like a completely, like, why? To what end?
Well, it gives people purpose. Yeah. And it's based on – Sting based that aspect of the story also on a real event that happened in Poland.
Yeah.
There was a, for lack of a better word, homeless shelter that a priest ran, and he didn't know how to help the clients, how to help them find themselves. And he came up with this idea that he would have them build a ship and give them purpose, and then they would go and sail the ship and would have jobs. And he actually did this. There are photos of this ship that those people built. The priest died before it was completed. International companies came together to finish funding the project, and it was completed. I think we underestimate how much work gives us purpose, gives us a reason to get up in the morning and start our day and do our day. And in this day and age where people often have careers that aren't part of their identity, it is something that's getting lost.
Yeah.
But in this show, I think it comes forward and reminds us. And it's not like it's that far in the past, but it is a different time and place.
Dan, there's this great noisy song where you all ask, "What have we got?" Would you talk about that song, because it sort of conveys that idea? I think
it does exactly. The song is called "We Got Not Out," which is another word for nothing.
Yeah,
and it's when I rally the men to build the ship, and we decide to finally do it. He's saying, "This is what we have. This is what makes us whole. We got nothing else." And it's a really rousing song, and it's beautifully staged by Karen. And there's so much action and so much happening in that number, but it is telling the men, "This is what we have. This is who we are. And without it, we have nothing." And it's a pretty stunning piece.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah, again, it's that cacophony. Let me play another moment from the play where we'll hear Bryant here talking about how this is the sum of your hopes. It's that browsing moment before we get to the intermission. It's really great. You want to set this up for us, this moment?
The priest inspires them all to build this ship, but then the salvage company locks down the shipyard and locks them out. And because of a combination of events, Gideon Fletcher rallies the troops to take back the shipyard. And that is where we get left at the end of Act One, with them going back to finish this ship.
Oh, come now. What's a long, hard fight mean to a Geordie? Am I right? We'll stand up right now, every one of us, and we'll occupy that yard. And when we get that ship built, we'll launch her at high tide mid-morning on a Tuesday, and we'll all sail her out to the North Sea. There's no feeling like it, lads. The land behind us, in the whole world ahead. It's a strange kind of beauty. It's cold and austere, and whatever it was that you've done to be here, it's the sum of your hopes, your despairs and your fears when the last ship sails. All right, bonny lads, get those pikes down your neck. Are you with us or not? Get yourselves up on deck! They may throw us in prison, and there's no money for bail, so nothing can stop us, we've not come here to fail.
May the angels protect us, for we have to prevail.
When the last ship sails, oh, the roar of the chains and the cracking of timbers, the noise at the end of the world in your ears, as a mountain of steel makes its way through the sea. And the last ship sails, and whatever you promised, whatever you've done, and whatever the station in life you become, in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, and no matter the meaning of this life that you've spun, on the earth or in heaven or under the sun, when the last
hold for applause. The last ship runs through October 1st. Performances daily, except for Sundays. There are details on our website, radiowest.org. Karen Eisenberg, Bryant Martin, Ruthie Stevens, Dan Sharkey, thank you very much for
being
with
us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.